Welcome to The Ether. Today is Thursday, March 10th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra, and it's the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol, and it's refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes and check them out online at WeFund.app. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by Glow Yield. Glow Yield is the ecosystem of Terra decentralized apps like Lotto and Creators, all powered by DeFi Yields. Glow Creators helps artists and influencers give their fans exclusive perks through membership, NFTs, and more. Glow Lotto is a PrizeLink savings account with a weekly chance to win the big jackpot. Tickets are free and perpetual, which means there's zero chance to lose money. Be sure to follow Glow Yield on Twitter and join the Discord community to stay up to date with all the glowing projects and check them out online at glowyield.com. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, the next 1,000 chains in the multiverse. Let's take a listen.
All right, well, we can probably get this started. Then we got... looks like 10 or 20 people in the room already.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks y'all for joining. It's good to see you.
So Rebecca, how did you want to start this off? Did you want to go into what we're doing with Jacob talking or?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Drew. I'll do a round of intros for everyone here. Some people here don't need an introduction at all, but I'll briefly intro everyone who's speaking today and give everyone an update as to what Sagan's been working on, because we've been very quiet for the last few months, just heads down, getting our product together and some partnerships in the markets that we're going to target. So we've been quite busy and wanting to get our ducks in a row, but we're ready to share some things. And I am very happy to see you all here, just to get an update on what we've been working on. So let's do intros first. So manning the desk today is Drew Beaudry, who is our community manager, Heroic, on the Sagan team. Jin and Jake are co-founders at Sagan. Jake's our CTO. Jin is strategy and operations, and we are thrilled to have this time to tell you what it is we've been doing. Zaki Mannion, for many of you here, needs no introduction, but I actually, Zaki's got an ever-changing and ever-longer list of things he's working on. You probably know him best right now as a Cosmos Lord and founder of Sommelier Protocol. But I'm actually going to turn it over to Zaki for a bit, who is one of our guests today. And yeah, Zaki, what have you been up to? What are you working on?
As always, I am just building as fast as possible. Yeah. it's been a busy day. I talked a little bit this morning about some of the stuff I'm excited about. Been working on Sommelier stuff, about launching sellers. I've been toward the seller launch. Also been having fun conversations about osmosis pools and community pools and DAO structure. There's a lot of exciting stuff going on there. I've been talking to the Agora team is pushing pretty hard on Run Protocol launch and reviewing the Run Protocol with a group of people this week. I've been helping out with that. Been talking about, more involved with multiple of the sort of multi-chain, interchain staking orchestration efforts going on in Cosmos. And all of these things are very exciting to me.
That's awesome. Well, we're very glad to have you here, but you're also going to be an advisor at Sagan, and already has given us terrific feedback and insights as to the product we're building. We're excited to dive into some of the more nitty-gritty technical aspects today, because we know that that's what people are most interested in, is to know what exciting innovation are we brewing. Cool. So I'm Rebecca. I'm CEO at Sagan, and I joined this project at the beginning of the year, and it's been absolutely fantastic working with the team, getting to know everyone in the Cosmos ecosystem and the broader crypto community, and we're very excited to share with you and to make available to you our product. So a little bit about what Sagan is, sort of where we've been and where we're going. So Sagan, for many of you here, probably you heard about us for the first time back in October. And there was this debut at Cosmoverse in Lisbon. And we had a mission to make developing on Cosmos a lot easier for the wider developer community. And what that really means is that we are trying to give the gift of self-sovereignty to developers who are looking to deploy applications in crypto and give them their own dedicated chains. That mission remains the same. And Jake in a second here is going to describe the product that we've built or that we are building for delivering on that mission. But just a note as to how we are going about this. So I think back in October, November, there was a lot of excitement around Sagan as a canary. And that is something that we had spent a lot of time thinking about, talking to others in the community. And when we took all the feedback and looked at the Cosmos stack, I think the conclusion that we came to is, yes, a canary would be very useful to helping developers test networks, for instance, or just experiment with things. But it doesn't get at the heart of the challenges that face developers who are building their own chains. So we dove a little deeper and decided, okay, it's more ambitious, but it's also far more effective and useful to start attacking the problem of validator recruitment, coordination, orchestration, and how chains are able to get stood up and then maintain close to 100% SLA. So that became our goal, and then the product followed therewith. We are also looking at very specific communities of developers. We'd love to have everyone on our chains, but we think that for the group of developers who are building applications that are more sort of high volume, so very high volume, they expect a certain level of performance, but low value transactions, having your own dedicated chain space is the most useful thing and the most useful architecture out of all the available crypto architectures. And where do you need high volume and low value? Probably in gaming, where people expect their gaming experiences to be seamless and fast and not too bothered with the costs of each of these transactions that are running. It's also true in entertainment. So NFTs for sure, but other forms of crypto entertainment that are emerging. We will always have a soft spot for DeFi and always want to support DeFi applications on our platform. If you have a DeFi application that would like its own dedicated chain space, of course, we would love to support that. But in terms of the communities that sort of uniquely need the kind of throughput, upgradability, and sovereignty that we're offering, it would be in gaming and entertainment. It has been a lot of fun talking to those developers and working with them so far. So without further ado, I'm actually going to turn it over to Jake to describe the product in a little more detail. And of course, Zaki is here, and Jack Zamplin is probably going to be joining us in a bit. Oh, hey, Jack.
He just joined.
Hey. Hey, Rebecca. Sorry I was running.
No, not at all. Thanks so much for being here. Zaki and Jack are here, and
thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. It's our honor. So we're all very excited for this. I'm excited to hear these three technical heavyweights really go at it in terms of crypto in general, but definitely the Cosmos stack as well. So Jake, please take it away.
Yeah, sure. Hey, everyone. As Rebecca introduced, from a kind of product perspective, we're trying to get at deploying a chain on Cosmos or using Cosmos tech or stack as easy as possible. So, we went and we looked around and we asked, what are the kind of difficulties? What are the barriers? And, what with the areas that we found, I think all of you might be able to believe and resonate with, we're often surrounding validators and the process of getting a validator set that is secure and dealing with the dynamics involved in finding validators and making sure that what's at stake is appropriately distributed amongst parties such that your chain is secure. In other words, it is difficult to purchase 2/3 of a voting power. And this is, of course, a great design. This is fundamental to proof of stake, but it kind of cuts out these projects that aren't really at the stage or do not have the kind of business model to incentivize validators in participating in this kind of economic. So, another way of looking at this is that projects kind of need to be in the same stage that they would when approaching a VC. A validator is taking a risk in validating a chain. They take on a cost, obviously, in operating. And we realize this, and we are trying to tackle that problem in some kind of creative ways. And I'm sure you've all have heard the term shared security. We are not different in the sense of solving this problem using shared security, but we kind of have a unique way of doing it, we think. So that's a little bit of a teaser there, but let me step back and kind of do a high level kind of product description, like if we were watching a demo or, we were at a keynote. So the kind of key user that we're imagining using this will be a developer or a project, someone who's wanting to deploy an application. And as Rebecca said, a dedicated chain or a single tenant chain, if you want to use that terminology. So what will the developer interactions be? What will they be able to do? Or how will they be able to do it? So we're going to have a chain. Our Sagan chain, and we're going to support a set of interactions. We imagine the first interaction would be a kind of launch. So a developer will request of our chain to launch their own chain. So we've been calling these chainlets. So you can imagine this is kind of like a blockchain as a service. So you request a chain to be launched. Chain is launched, then you come back to Sagan and you deploy code by requesting code to be deployed. And, you continue to iterate and do those actions over and over again. So that's really simple. That description is easy to follow, but there's, I think, a lot of magic that has to happen for that to be realized. And one of those kind of key areas that we're anticipating a lot of challenge. The technical challenge is on the validators and network operator sides, where we're going to be expecting of our validators to actually service and handle these requests to spin up chainlets and then further deploy code to them. And if you guys have ran validators or if you've kept up with the kind of chatter that goes on around doing this successfully. You know, that's a challenging problem, and it's one that's not cheap. Because we're kind of imagining a future where these chains are kind of like a commodity, in the same way that a cloud provider like AWS or Azure is a commodity provider of compute and compute resources and storage and RAM. So how do we get there? How do we provide a commodity service for launching a blockchain using a Cosmos stack? And we have some creative ways of doing this, but I guess we could probably save some of these details. But one of the ways we're imagining this is to realize the difference between utilization and capacity of running any type of resource in a deployed environment. So, like, you imagine right now, if I were to launch a Cosmos chain and I found my validators, I'm mature enough project to do so, I can ask those validators to install a binary and, you know, begin running this chain, but I'm going to expect of them to have at hand the physical resources, the costly resources that will always be able to manage the potential utilization of a capacity. So if I have a chain that's receiving a couple transactions an hour versus a chain that's receiving hundreds or thousands, I would expect that service be able to facilitate. And from our point of view, there's an over-provisioning that happens with this kind of setup when imagining the scale that we want to get to and commoditizing chain launches in Cosmos. So if you imagine 1,000 chains or 10,000 chains, we believe that the way to get to commoditization is to match the cost to the utilization of resources as opposed to the potential capacity and allocation of resources. All right, so that's another kind of peek. I know that's a bit into the weeds, but that's for our network operators. So I described our kind of developer experience and what our operators are going to have to deal with. We also are a platform for VMs, as we see it. And we'll also have support in the future for launching our chainlets as Cosmos SDK applications. But we're going to first kind of aim for EVMs, and then Cosmwasm, then Agoric, and the likes, we hope one day. And the reason that we're wanting to start there is in part because of kind of security guarantees of having VMs and, you know, how that will allow our operators to feel comfortable in running foreign or guest implementations. So in order to be able to provide a service for kind of VM type of partners, we're thinking of creative solutions as well, where you can imagine, much like launching on, I'll go back to the cloud example, launching an instance on Azure or AWS, you know, you can choose an operating system, and we're kind of imagining that same kind of option where you can have different types of VMs or launching, you know, your raw Cosmos SDK application in the future. So that's kind of what we're thinking on that platform provider front. And then lastly, we have the end user, so the application user of these dApps or apps, blockchain apps that will be deployed. Because what we want to do is we want to service the full arc of a project, from that early ideation, getting something out in the public before they have a business model and could even afford validators. But we also want to help them in realizing the engagement and the actual interaction with the community. So we imagine as well that we'll have interesting problems and kind of creative space on the end user side. You can imagine, in a world where there's all these chainlets, how will we handle bridging? How will we handle wallet interactions where presently, if you were to use the navigation of any popular wallet, you know, kind of navigation architecture as a drop-down menu for every network. And we imagine that kind of thing won't scale. So we're getting into that space as well. So those are kind of the forefront tiers of our product. We can always, I mean, we can dive into to deeper parts of each one of those in Q&A, but I hope that at least gives everyone kind of a view of where we're thinking, where we're trying to, you know, be creative and the kind of problems we're wanting to solve.
Thanks so much, Jake.
Yep.
So yeah, no, that's fantastic. And, a lot of the things that you just talked about there, I'm sure for Zaki and for Jack, these are very familiar problems. You've also spent a lot of time thinking about them. How do you see this fitting into the Cosmos stack and just generally addressing problems that developers have when they're looking to get onto crypto?
You're asking what other problems that we're looking to solve for those building, those developers?
Oh, no. So it's a question to Zaki and,
oh.
and Jack.
Oh, sorry.
No, Jake, thanks. So everything that Jake has been talking about is, well, there are concepts that you've heard before as we've been describing the Sagan product, but they're also touching upon known tech problems in Cosmos that a lot of projects have been issued to solve. And there are problems that are generally applicable to those who are looking to build on crypto. So as you're hearing Jake talk about how we've been thinking about the product and how we're looking to solve these challenges, I mean, based on your experience building Cosmos from the ground up, how do you see it?
Yeah, you know, I think that this is, first off, I really love you guys' team and Rebecca. Thank you again for having me. Really fun hearing Jake talk about the product. You know, Jake and I have chatted about it quite a bit. And I think that, especially as we enter the era of interchain and each of the specific applications out there in the interchain having their own chain with its sort of like scalability benefits, Sagan is going to play a huge role in that in enabling developers to build these kind of applications. With things like interchain accounts and interchain queries, building these truly composable interchain applications where you're managing funds on Osmosis and potentially doing trades or having a lending platform that spans a large number of chains. This world of application-specific blockchains that was kind of envisioned by the Cosmos white paper really comes into focus. And you guys are going to be a big part of bringing that into reality.
So I think like one of the things that I think a lot about is, you know, when you're starting something like Cosmos, I think it's very important to focus on things, on sort of getting the atomic components right and like doing things that don't scale. And so, you know, in many ways, like validator operations and provisioning and upgrades and all of these things have been somewhat of the neglected pieces of the Cosmos ecosystem. And it's certainly stuff that, like, you know, other crypto ecosystems have. So like we focused on composability, permissionless, sovereignty out of the gate. And I think we got all of those things right and they were the right things to focus on. But now is very much the time to start focusing on sort of provisioning, upgradability, application lifecycle management. Like all these things that basically sound like enterprise software terminology. And I think we're probably going to slowly find our way to finding like, you know, much more attractive terminology for these things that make them sound less boring. But like, this is very much the era of how do you take these ideas of databases that we, of like the sort of distributed community owned database.
Yes.
And make it a little bit more, and make it more sustainable, essentially at scale.
That's exactly right. I mean, if you kind of squint your eyes and look at what a Cosmos chain is, it's this presently kind of very vertical, but very stateful machine that has very strict safety and data consistency kind of design to it. And this is not unheard of or unseen in the your database world. And obviously, the terminology from sharding and ways of distributing state and handling scale to get a little more horizontal is also something we see from that world. So I think there's a lot that we can borrow and start to think about and use from tackling those problems when thinking of a traditional database and bringing that same kind of thinking and design architecture to the problems that we're trying to solve when we're thinking of Sagan and making, you know, getting to a crazy state of launching thousands of these and making it affordable for our operator to run almost like a commodity service.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, guys. So I think we have just looking at all the people who are listening in now, we've got a good mix of people who are from the community of builders and people who are aspiring to do applications themselves. So I guess for you, Jake, you're thinking about this audience and thinking about those who will be coming on to Sagan as initial users, I mean, can you sort of describe what a life cycle would look like?
Yeah, sure. I tried getting to that with the product description, but it should be so simple, and it should be as simple as it could possibly be, right? Like we should have some type of CLI tool. You should have a way of publishing or deploying. You should have a way of spinning up instances, but in this case, they're chainlets, listing them, checking their status. You know, if you've developed with any kind of, I hate to call it this, but like any kind of serverless kind of technology or have worked with cloud, then you're familiar with these kind of interactions that the CLI tools have or a plugin into, you know, VS Code or you name it. There's a standard life cycle to all these toolings that, or standard life cycle to the application deployment and building process that these tools service. So, I mean, you can, here's kind of a use case of maybe a project that could be using Sagan. Is you can imagine, all right, I have an idea, I start developing it, I start writing the code for it, I have a local environment where I'm devving and testing and breakpointing and, you know, debugging, doing that whole thing. But now I'm at a point where I want to release it and start getting a little bit of feedback, pointing people to it. I might have a dev environment, I might have a staging environment, I might have a production environment. You can imagine me launching these different chains with a command line tool, something that's very simple where, you know, I'm in my code's root and I say, all right, I don't have an instance up yet. Let me spin up an instance, you know, allocate an instance. We have a chainlet that spins up. All right, great, check status. Chainlet status, A-okay, ready to, you know, receive the first deployment of code. Great, I go back to my CLI, I say, all right, package deploy, launches off, and I'm pointing it at the chainlet I just spun up. It goes and it gets deployed. I check the status. Then I go to my web app or wherever I'm hosting from and point my Web3 at the domain name or the IP address and port that CLI spits out. Play around with it. Rinse and repeat. Do it over and over again. And like this is... We think it should be as easy as you see in the more traditional spaces or the non-crypto spaces. And we think for obvious reasons, proof of stake is really kind of a great kind of consensus engine, a secure and reasonable approach for this in consideration of it being public and not requiring as many nodes as proof of work. Or requiring something like proof of authority, where it's less decentralized, like we can make a service that uses shared secure. We can share validator sets, and we can host these kind of services as a platform to be able to allow these developers to launch that easily. And like we're thinking even past that. We're even thinking of education and ramping in. You know, this probably dates me a little bit. I don't know how young everyone is here in the crowd, but When Go first came out, you know, the kind of resource to go to before Go was the classic O'Reilly book, and you know, buying the 125 page weekend read or week read and learning. But with Go, one of the coolest things was you can go online and interact with it and work from within the browser in a singular experience. And that kind of integrative learning where the line between the product and the code and what you're learning was kind of blurred. We're imagining that same kind of thing. You can imagine launching a blockchain at the end of a tutorial, and it's live and it's secure and it's public. There's such an accessibility and an opening for all sorts of business models and use cases if we make it that accessible, if we do make it that easy. Whereas right now, I mean, we love this technology stack and we love what Cosmos has been built and what's been built around it. The principles are keen and beautiful. And I love distributed systems. I get it, but we want to be able to get more of that technology. I'll get more people using it. And right now, you know, having to find those validator sets is a difficult process. We want to make it easier, right? Like, I mean, it feels like a reasonable next step.
Yeah, thanks so much. Go for it, Jen. No, go for it, please.
Yeah. So what Jake kept mentioning usability and making it easier to use. And in general, a lot of our product decisions and a lot of our design has been really focused around designing the product ground up to make this experience for people coming into the blockchain ecosystem, to make that experience for both not only developers, but the end users easier ultimately. And so this the reason why we kind of went with this chainlet idea is also very it's a usability issue, where when like for example, when someone tries to deploy a smart contract on Ethereum, it's a shared block space that everyone is kind of competing for access. And by allowing developers to spin out chainlets autonomously and automatically, democratizes block space a little bit and allows each developers to experience a world where their traffic only determines kind of like the cost of what it is to run their blockchain solutions ultimately, instead of other people's competing products in that block space that determines kind of the usability and the pricing of using this blockchain. And so this is like kind of step one of how we've thought about how to make, you know, blockchain in general more accessible. And Rebecca earlier mentioned that a lot of our focus is going to be on those blockchain use cases that are low value, high volume, that's almost impossible to come into today because of the way that most products work. That's kind of where a lot of our focus is going to be on in the market, especially because it makes that so much easier to use for developers who are targeting those kind of use cases ultimately.
Thanks so much, Jen. That's absolutely right. And you've been working very hard on figuring out the token component of all of this. And I'm sure everyone here is interested in hearing more about that. So right before we get to the economic side of Sagan, just real quick, Jake, rounding out the wonderful discussion around product, we hear the term shared security a lot. It's one of the flavors of the month. Shared security, interchain security, multiple different versions of it. So for those of you who've been following Sagan for a long time, you know that shared security is part of our product. But I'm sure there are lots of questions around, well, how exactly do you use it? And there are other versions of shared security out there. What differentiates us? And why is shared security important to begin with? So Jake, if you could sort of talk to those questions and also, I guess you've touched upon it already, but highlight a little more what it means to use shared security for something like horizontal scaling, which is becoming more and more important as block space becomes rare.
Yeah, sure. So I mean, that put simply, with proof of stake, with Tendermint consensus, there needs to be two-thirds honest operators or participants in consensus for the network to remain secure. Or put another way, if there is a third or more malicious or dishonest actors or actors who are double signing for some other reason, forking, then the network cannot proceed by the design of consensus. So the establishment of what's two-thirds, what's one-third is not the number of validators, but by the amount of what by the amount of staked tokens. So each participant in consensus, by virtue of how much is staked with them via delegators or staked from, you know, their own purse, there's a proportional amount of voting power. So chains that don't have a lot at stake can be vulnerable to a simple attack wherein at least a third of voting power is purchased by a single party or a colluding party. So anyone who can, if the token's liquid enough, if there's enough access on the market available, can effectively block the network, censor the network, or in worst case, take it over altogether. So the idea is well, these smaller chains that might not be able to make a case for, you know, staking, I don't know, you know, millions, tens of millions, even more, 100 million in collateral to secure the chain. For smaller chains that can't afford to do that or have the kind of business case to be made for validators to do it, the idea is that you could, as a chain, approach another chain and ask this providing chain to extend you its validator set. And this providing chain that's extending its validator set to you as a consumer chain kind of has this agreement with their validators wherein if they cheat on the smaller consuming chain, that they will be slashed and their stake on this larger chain that has the enough value to kind of make the chain secure, those validators will be slashed, right? They'll be treated as if they cheated on the providing chain. So this is a great design. We're using this same design, but there are kind of different ways of deploying this and kind of different varieties. So one kind of way of deploying this would be loosening this idea or loosening the number of members from that providing chain, the number of validators or providing security, choosing a subset of them to provide security, extend security to the consuming chain. So that's one way of doing it. Another way could be a subset via some market mechanism. The prior way of doing it where you choose a subset or a subset is agrees to it might be done through governance. Another way might be through marketing, through a marketplace. But in any event, in either of those cases, there's kind of a public request or a community lobbying, a solicitation to receive security as a consuming chain from a parent chain. And there's not any guarantee that you receive it. And you're still kind of stuck in the scenario where you have to make a case for why your chain should be secured by the resources of this parent chain. And this is an okay model. It has its pros and cons. It's just like any other kind of engineering or any other kind of dilemma. So what we're doing that's a little bit different than that is we're obligating our network operators to providing security or operating the chains, all of our chainlets as subject to automatic slashing. So that they're subject to slashing if they do not cooperate. So we're not going to be doing a subset. We're not going to be doing a type of governance before receiving security or a marketplace. So how can we do this? How can we make this viable? Why isn't it that other people, why is it that this isn't, you know, the way forward for everyone? There's a number of reasons, but we think it all comes down to kind of the economics, the value of the chains that are being secured. I think as Jim put it, the high volume, low value versus low volume, high value. So these chains that have a higher value but might not have the certain kind of demands that would tax a service. So in short, what we're trying to do is find that point of commoditization by reducing the cost of running and operating these chains, so that the argument doesn't have to be made for operators. And our operators, no matter the chain they're running, it can be profitable for them. And how that's the case, Jen will be able to cover in the token economics. But it's what permits us, allows us to take on this kind of particular approach or implementation of shared security.
Thanks so much, Jake. That's awesome. And I think that offers a very clear idea to those who've been having questions about, you know, what is shared security exactly? How is Sagan using it? And I think that that's brilliant. Yes. So, Jen, I'm going to throw a question to you that I'm sure everyone sort of has on their minds here, which is when token?
Per usual, I'll say 2 weeks away.
Yeah.
Like every other crypto project. No, but... I think in general we're deliberately thinking as we mentioned about how to make crypto more usable, and so there's a lot of thinking and design thought that needs to happen for this. But I can briefly talk about some of the design decisions that we are kind of targeting right now, and show what kinds of really interesting paradigms that those kinds of token economics really unveils. There's a couple of things. So as mentioned, I'm going to start using examples in the real world to kind of make analogies. But as mentioned earlier, like a traditional blockchain, traditional blockchain like Ethereum, the block space is shared, right? So when, for example, I deploy a smart contract, and let's say Jack deploys a smart contract, and Jack's smart contract is super popular because it's, you know, Jack's smart contract. I have to pay more because of that. And that's a really weird model, ultimately. When I sign up for AWS and suddenly Netflix's traffic goes up, my pricing doesn't increase. So it's kind of a weird situation that this happens. And so this whole chainlet model, we can decouple all of that because my block space is separate from, you know, Jack's block space. So that's really good. But we can go one step deeper and we can do something much more interesting, which is if you think about how Amazon works, right? Let's say I am Uber and I'm deploying on Amazon today. When I get a ride from Uber, I don't pay Amazon. Like, that's not a thing that happens in the real world in any business model sense. But in crypto, for some odd reason, that is the user model that people have. So when I want to use Uniswap on Ethereum, I pay Ethereum, which is a little bit backwards because I don't care about Ethereum. I just want to use Uniswap, right? And so some of the models that we were thinking about essentially is not having the end users essentially pay for the block space. And if you start thinking about it in these kinds of design terms, it makes a lot more sense and it enables a lot more actual business models that exist in the real world. So just as I pay Uber and Uber pays Amazon, our token model we're thinking is exploring something closer to that, where essentially the dApp developer decides to figure out a monetization model with the end users in whatever way they want, whether it be per transaction, whether it's a subscription, whether it's advertisement based. They can figure whatever they want and charge me in whatever method that they think is the best. And then what this allows us to do is then the developer pays for the actual block space that they're using. Very similarly to how if Uber were deployed today, they would pay Amazon directly. And so by decoupling this token flow model, actually, we can actually enable really interesting models, as we mentioned, that involves around high volume, low value transactions, because a lot of the times these high volume, low value transactions, the developers don't really mind paying a whole bunch of tiny little fees to the actual infrastructure users. And we can essentially onboard, you know, way more users ultimately onto these platforms, and kind of similarly to how Amazon does it. So that's just kind of some design decisions that we're thinking about. But as mentioned, we're just kind of evaluating what kinds of token models exist today in the real world, and just kind of rebuilding it all, because a lot of it we think don't make any sense, and a lot of it is kind of there because of this singular competing block space that exists in traditional blockchain spaces. And we think that that's a very unusable type of user behavior that we want to fix with Sagan ultimately.
Thanks, Jen. And I want to throw one more question to you before we open it up to the floor. I know that we have some people patiently waiting to ask questions, so thank you for sticking around, guys. You'll be able to ask your questions soon. But Jen, there are so many different projects in Cosmos right now that are trying to make it easier for developers. And some of them have gone the VM route, like Evmos. Some of them are about deploying smart contracts in a really simple way, like a Juno or an Archway, Agoric. So is it the case that developers have to look at all these options and then Sagan's yet another option, and just it'll be a little too overwhelming to pick between them? I mean, is that the kind of decision that we ask developers to make, or is there a way that we can streamline the ecosystem experience using the token?
Yeah, so one of the really exciting things about decoupling this revenue flow from end user to developer, then developer to Sagan, the really exciting thing about this is that that revenue model, as mentioned, can be whatever the developer wants ultimately. And so a really cool feature that we can bring essentially is the developer can say, hey, pay us in whatever token you want, essentially. So let's say, for example, there's a project that exists on Juno today, and they're like, hey, Juno, wonderful, really cool project, really love the community, but we need more block space that Juno chain can't offer right now. So what we can do is they can say, hey, why don't you just pay the same way, pay Juno token, right? Pay essentially the developers Juno tokens, and then the developers will figure out a way to pay for the Sagan block space, and then and the interaction flow for the end user is going to be identical to if it was on Juno. And so on our end, ultimately, we believe that Sagan is going to become kind of like a scalability solution for almost anybody, whether they're already kind of deployed in another blockchain today, or if they're kind of new players coming in looking for like an easy way to deploy blockchain solutions with their own kind of chain space ultimately.
That's awesome. Yep. So you can see that we've been thinking soup to nuts on how to address the different issues that developers are using, and then do the work on our own back end to make sure that those needs are supported, but also working within the ecosystem, because Sagan is not going to be the only tool, obviously, that developers will use to build their dApps and then deploy those dApps onto chains. But we've thought very carefully about how do we incentivize our partners in this ecosystem to all work together to bring a wholesome solution to these developers who are day by day just proliferating new applications on crypto. It's very exciting. Great. So in the time that we have left, I'd love to open it up to the floor. So any questions or thoughts that the audience might have, please feel free to go ahead and request to unmute your line, and then we can go ahead and take questions. So we have one person waiting, and I'm going to go ahead and unmute, and please go ahead with your question. Ad Financier, did you have a question? Connecting.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for joining.
Thank you. I want Sagan Network's opinion on KYC.
Can you be a little more specific, please? Lots of different components to KYC. Are you thinking about how do we provision KYC as a tech solution? What do we think about KYC in general? Should we have KYC?
In general.
I personally don't like it, but I don't think Sagan is necessarily going to take an opinion on it, besides the fact that the protocol does not have KYC built in. It is pseudonymous like all other crypto protocols.
Understood. Do you acknowledge that KYC is anti-DeFi?
Yeah, I would say so.
Brilliant. That's all I needed to ask. Thank you.
Yeah, so if anyone else in the audience would like to ask any questions, I know that I don't see any right now, so I was wondering if Jack or Zucky had any comments on what's been said. You've been the Sagan team has been doing the majority of the talking so far, so wondering if you have any thoughts pop in your head.
Zucky, how many chains do you have going right now at any given time?
That's a little bit of an off-topic question. I'm actually kind of thinking a little bit about where Sagan falls in sort of the spectrum of solutions that people are trying to bring to market. You know, there are, you know, in many ways, it's like Sagan feels like a little bit of a, you know, throwback to an earlier phase of design discussions about, you know, how to build like sort of scalable blockchains that are very friendly to application developers. I think like one of the things that I think makes a difference here though is that Cosmos now exists. So that like if you are building applications for like, for instance, high throughput, low value applications, you can also compose with blockchains that are really building for high value applications like DeFi applications, et cetera. And so that there's like the spectrum of solutions that exist within the Cosmos and within the IBC network is to me sort of like what's very exciting about sort of the future phases of Cosmos. And I think what is exciting about Sagan.
Yeah, that's a great point, Zucky, because I don't know if a product like Sagan would be very useful in a pre-IBC world, because you would need the interconnectedness that a typical Ethereum provides. But with IBC, then that's where you can get the interconnectedness, but still benefit from having your own block space and your own consensus and everything.
Absolutely. And Zucky, I mean, you had a question in there about where does this fit exactly in the spectrum of new Cosmos projects that are coming up and trying to address infrastructure and giving developers a platform to develop on top of. So, what we're trying to do is very simply to make deploying onto your own chain as simple as deploying a smart contract. And there are other projects that are figuring out how to make deploying the smart contract piece as easy as possible. And the aspiration is to partner with them to take care of the chain piece. So right now there is no there is no space in our product roadmap for our own native VM. We would be working with other providers, and so we see that the projects are doing very well, and that developers are really starting to use those tools just for the application piece, which is very encouraging. I think for us, the real value add and innovation is what Jake is putting together now. In terms of what's happening on the chain. Jake, any further thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, you're covering it. I would say something about IBC that something that we can do that's kind of special is, given the architecture and given that our validator set will be validating and operating the same set of chainlets, we can kind of get to scaling IBC between chainlets in a special and unique way, where we could expect our operators to kind of leader elect amongst them in a round fashion, or using some deterministic algorithm based off of the block height But each validator could perhaps have a turn at forwarding any IBC messages in kind of like a mailbox P2P approach, given that each of the validators will in their data centers have the source and destination between any pairs of chainlets. So could, you can imagine
could also do it based on the Tendermint proposer too.
The Tendermint proposer node. Right. Yeah. Whoever is the proposer of the current state of Sagan, the Sagan chain. So that's a good point. And that would scale nicely with the, I know that the proposer is also responsible for an equivalent amount of work that they have at stake as well, which would be a nice property for the IBC kind of leader election. I really love this idea because, like I said, we can do that and think of it between chainlets, not necessarily chainlets to other chains, but between the chainlets, because these operators will be expected to operate all the same chainlets. So I think there's something really, really cool in that. And I mean, at the end of the day, I look at this as a platform, and we kind of have, I mean, this is what I was trying to describe, and you know, I'm still trying to wrap the words around it, but we have this platform where we have these different stakeholders, and we think that there's something really special about the technology, and special about the technology also in the broader ecosystem that we can somehow wrap and use and put together in a way that we're solving problems that couldn't be solved before, and introducing developers to this kind of scalable world of blockchain that we hadn't seen before. And we're not the end-all solution, not really. I don't think we'd ever claim to be. And there's an evolution of projects that might, you know, spin off and, you know, want even more sovereignty with their own validator sets. But we want to get that higher up the funnel, that group of developers much earlier on than maybe Cosmos has been able to do in the past. Or at least, I mean, that's what we hope. Sorry for the rambling answer, guys. Like, if you all were ever on a meeting with me, you'd realize that I'm quite capable of taking a quarter of the time meandering like a river.
No, Jake, that's it's very enlightening. And Jake your background is in research, and you're used to teaching, so I'm not surprised. Yeah. You can talk at length about these topics. Oh, that's great. So a few minutes left here. Just got in a question. I'm going to go ahead and unmute you.
Hey, you're up on the stage, Kevin. Feel free to ask whatever question.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. So I've been trying my best to follow this, and it's pretty technical, and some of y'all are talking about things that I can't fully track, but I'm gonna try and feed it back to you and see if make sure I understand it with a smooth brain. Does that sound okay?
Please do. We need to be better at it, or at least I do. So yes, please.
Okay. No, I mean, I think you've been doing a good job, Jacob. It's just I've been out of the loop for a while, and I remember this is how, for me coming to this, these are the assumptions that I have brought. When I first heard about Sagan, I don't know when y'all started this, but I remember having these conversations around, I guess it was August of last year. There was some frustration about the timing it was taking to launch certain projects on the hub, and some people were pointing to this idea of having, it would be great to have a faster, more rapid way to deploy new chains and possibly new features. And am I correct that this is, and some people were pointing to Kusama on the Polkadot chain, not that we want to necessarily emulate them in any way, but am I in the right ballpark characterizing Sagan in that way?
Thanks, Kevin. So I think that you definitely heard right early on that this was meant to be a fast chain on which you could experiment, test new things, and just get started quickly if you had a really high conviction project in mind. But I think we've moved away from that Kusama-like model where the chain is really meant to be sort of a very elaborate test net. No offense to people who are fans of Kusama and Polkadot, but that's really what that project has evolved to become. And I think for us, the way that Kusama is set up in terms of the token piece and requiring the auction, all this, like, frankly, BS that developers have to go through in order to develop on Kusama, as well as the way that it's architected, how different that is from Cosmos, there just couldn't be a one-to-one analogy.
Sure.
Yeah. And so it forced us to think much more deeply about what it is that really troubles developers about building on Cosmos. So we have developed a very product-focused strategy to address those challenges. And so Jake and Jack and Zaki have been describing the product in some amount of detail. But suffice to say that it is still the case that if you are a developer that is looking to go faster, to spit up lots of test nets, to experiment new ideas, or if you have high conviction on an idea, you want to go all in on it, this chain is still for you. So we're solving the same kinds of problems, but we're doing it in a very product-focused manner and also introducing a lot of new innovation in order to make that a reality. I also want to highlight something that Jin brought up earlier, which is looking at the landscape of Cosmos, a broader ecosystem, all these great projects that are happening for smart contract development, for getting applications up and running in a small amount of time, whether that's Evmos or Juno, Agoric, that we really want to work with them. And we think that for developers that are looking to make sure that their chains can start off in a very simple and fast manner, and that they can maintain that investment of time and resources that they've made to stand up that chain, that's what Sagan is here for. Does that help?
Yeah, that definitely helps. I guess so replacing the auctions, which I mean, I don't point to those other projects as something to necessarily emulate, but you know, I'm curious what the Sagan approach will be for like proposing, like how do you get in the door here with the project? And then I had one other piece. I was just looking back at some of my this earlier comment or thought that I had, a shower thought from August. I don't even know if this applies to Sagan. I'm just going to drop it here. When all these projects launch, you know, I had this thought before, this idea of like, if we're going to be rapidly deploying and launching these projects, where do people find out, you know, like why isn't Cosmos like the info desk to the universe in a way? Like, I like this idea of Cosmos being the internet of blockchains. You know, but like, who's the decentralized search engine? I don't, you know, can it be a like MintScan is so awesome for searching the chains, but if there was something that was more like a front facing UX where you can zap to any project, I think it would be very cool. I'm not saying that Sagan has to be that, but yeah.
Yeah. Jacob kind of brought this up a little bit earlier when he was saying that
we have to
innovate even on the wallet front, because the traditional Kepler-esque vision of you click a bar and it drops down all the networks, it doesn't really work. You can imagine if you had to do something like that, like you said, for like a, that's why Google exists. So yeah, it can be like an aggregator of these and a place to view it. So there, we're going to have to even do some innovations or some creative thinking about how to display a, when there's hundreds or thousands of chainlets, we need to be creative about how you search through and query and find new promising projects.
Those will be some of the
No, go ahead.
I think those will be some of the tool flows that we definitely need to explore, because as mentioned, usability is like a big part of what we're trying to address. And what you just talked about, which is the how to actually explore the inner chain, essentially, it's kind of a, right now it's a little kludgy of an experience because it depends on like which application. It's kind of different everywhere, but on our end, that's something that we're gonna definitely focus on. But really on our end, as mentioned, it's for the developer coming in, essentially what we're trying to do is replicate the experience of like a developer going to something like Ethereum, right? And they say, hey, I'm going to send you this compiled smart contract, and I want it deployed on Ethereum. And from our end, the user experience we want for the developer to be essentially identical, where they just bring a compiled smart contract, they bring it to our network, and then they say, hey, put it up. And in the background, automatically, there's a chainlet that gets provisioned. And now you have essentially a smart contract running on a single blockchain, all powered through the shared security stuff that that Jacob and the other folks were talking about. And so on our end, it's like, there's the aspect of, you know, how do we make sure that the existing Cosmos ecosystem projects are connected and stuff like that. But on our end, at the very beginning, at least, we'll focus on some of the Sagan chainlets that exist, because that, you know, each of those will be independent, sovereign blockchains, essentially, that happen to have been running just a compiled smart contract, but they are sovereign nonetheless.
Okay, so they'll be coming to you and pitching or bringing their compiled code, and you'll be launching them as chainlets.
And the idea here is to make it all permissionless, right? So the difference between the way that Polkadot and Kusama does it is there's like this whole elaborate dance that every developer has to do to get the auction slot in order for them to do this. On our end, it's like we want to make this as permissionless as possible, which means that a lot of the strain gets offboarded and into the validators and the infrastructure in the background. And that's the innovation that we're looking to develop within Sagan, is that kind of coordination and provisioning in the background that we need to do as validators to make sure that when someone comes and says, you know, maybe 1,000 people comes with different, you know, a smart contract compiled code, and they just say, deploy this, and we're going to be able to just spin up 1,000 different chains essentially in the background.
Okay, that's exciting. But yeah, I do think that being able to search and find chains, the Google of the interchain, is once you got 1,000, it's a lot.
Yeah, that was a great question, Kevin. David is requesting, so I'm going to bring him up on stage.
Hey guys, before we do this last one, I got to run. It's been a long one here, but thank you very much for having me, and look forward to doing more of these in the future.
Thanks so much for being here, Jack. Yeah. Wonderful points, as absolutely. Always. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jack.
All right, take care. Okay, bye.
Yeah, thank you, Jack. I will also be running soon, but I'm going to throw David on stage right now for his question. Hey, David, you're up on stage. Feel free to ask a question. Looks like you're muted, David.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Great. Hi, everyone. I think this probably dovetails into the previous question. I've been thinking a lot about kind of just like the user journey for somebody who is new to crypto. And I think today, as it stands, that's, you know, for better or for worse, typically Coinbase. And then there is some sort of discovery that goes on after downloading the app, whether that's Coinbase Earn or something like Rabbit Hole to help for discovery. And I think, you know, you kind of touched on this when you said there are so many options and it can be overwhelming. And Sagan's goal is kind of to lower the barrier of entry and making the space easier and more welcoming to builders. So I know Jack is working on initiatives like the Builders Foundation, but maybe someone could speak to like, what is the phase zero and what's the decision tree for a dev that's looking to either newly get into blockchain or into the Cosmos ecosystem for the first time? Yeah, what is that dev journey as it stands today?
That's a really great question, David. Thanks so much for asking. So I see that both Jake and Zaki are unmuted, but I will just say real quick that I am going to let the developers who are speaking on this call speak to what kind of decision process a developer undertakes when they are looking to try things out for the first time. I can tell you that from our perspective, the idea is to make tools that are as familiar to the vast majority of developers, particularly in gaming and entertainment, that exists now, so that the learning curve is not nearly as steep as it currently is for them to be able to deploy onto a chain and definitely onto a Cosmos chain. And we can talk a little later about what happens once a developer is on and they keep working on their chainlet, so their dedicated chain on our space. Last thing I'll mention before I throw it over to Jake and Zaki is Sagan is free to use from the get-go. So we talked about the structure of our token, how the fees are paid on our network, but that's sort of all for later from a developer's perspective. Kind of like any new accounts that you sign up for online for new tools, there is a free period during which we understand that you are building, you're busy developing, testing new things out. There's probably not a lot of traffic on your particular chainlet at that point because you maybe have not opened it up yet you're just not seeing a lot of traction to start, but that will grow later. And then that's when the token piece kicks in. But before that, it is a free period. And so you can do this for one project because you just want to have that one dedicated chain, or you can do it multiple times because you want multiple test nets running. So that is sort of the first point at which a developer looks at the options that they have and does anything cost them upfront. For Sagan, that would be a no. And in terms of developer incentives, I mean, we can talk about those later once we start rolling those out. But that's from a business perspective, what a developer would be looking at first once they're looking at their slate of options for development. But let me stop there and throw it over to the people who actually develop 24/7 to understand what their decision processes would be like.
Yeah, so I don't develop 24/7, but I I mean I can answer some of this. I mean the developer engagement in Cosmos I'm not as privy to, but the kind of decision making criteria of a developer I can speak a little bit to. I think if I were, for example, to start a project tomorrow, what is it that I'm going to be considering? What is it that I want to decide on, or what do I need to think about, or where do I need to go? I think, you know, it depends on what my drive is. It depends on what I want to make. So let's say that I want access to an audience. If I'm wanting to build something that, you know, is only going to work at a scale, then I want to go someplace where there's users. If I want to make something that is kind of like a passion project and I want to learn something new, I'll go someplace where I have to learn something new. If I want to build something quick and dirty and I just want to get it out and just build it, I might choose a technology I'm familiar with or a language I'm familiar with. So it's hard to really narrow down an explicit kind of here is the decision tree of a developer per se, but what I can tell you is where developers are and where they are developing, and it's every ecosystem kind of forms around these developers who end up choosing to go with that ecosystem. Else, there probably wouldn't be an ecosystem. So with Cosmos, there it draws a certain developer who wants to build their own chain. you know, they're usually Go developers who are okay with kind of learning something new. They're going to be using a framework. Framework's well documented. There's documentation online. There is a community of builders and lots of material. As far as like engagement beyond that, I know there's a number of organizations, for example, the Builders Program that facilitates, you know, new projects and new developers. But at a certain point after they begin to develop and write code, there's the further journey for the developer, which is this a business? Is this a product? Is this a thing I want to continue doing? Do I want to quit my job and do this? What is it? Do I want to bring people on with me to work on this? Do I want to go find investors? And with Sagan, the kind of thought is that we're making this tech that is Cosmos in this ecosystem that we you know love. We're trying to bring it in earlier so that a developer can work on this at a point in which they're comfortable, but a point that doesn't require what is usually a more mature or kind of later stage project that ends up finding validators and ends up becoming a live secure chain. So I mean that's kind of a rough answer. It's not from a product management perspective, it's not as clean of a story for the developer. But yeah, I mean that's the best way I can put it. Zaki's been obviously a kind of father to this technology and to this ecosystem and can probably speak to his personal experience. So I mean, Zaki, feel free to add anything on top of that or not.
Yeah. I will say that basically I would say where Cosmos is succeeding is kind of like, or, you know, to people who want the power of the Cosmos stack, the ability to customize everything. And this is typically people who have been in the cryptocurrency space for a while. Like they've worked at another L1, they've worked at a dApp, they've worked at a crypto exchange. To that community of people, they're really able to take what we've provided in the Cosmos SDK and really make it dance and sing. And the problem that I think Cosmos really struggles with is like a lack of stories for sort of initial, for like, oh, this is a great place to build your first dApp, your first attempt to build something, to build a community-oriented project, et cetera. And I think, you know, one way in which we are approaching that is by doing the Cosmos, you know, the smart contract layers on top of Cosmos, the Evmos, Cosmwasm, Agoric sort of trifecta, which gets people into the ecosystem and in the community, but it also doesn't really give them, it's a sort of non-linear path to trying to build your own custom chain from there. And I think what's very exciting about Sagan is that potentially we can build a lower activation energy for developers. I think the other thing that things like Sagan might come up, might really end up making a big difference about is the other thing that I think is really just like painful in Cosmos. It's going to be very painful for probably this year and next year. And we talked about it from the UX point of view a little bit. It's just how much there is to integrate in Cosmos, how much you have to integrate your own block explorer, you have to integrate, you have to do an integration with Kepler, and all of the things that we have done that have worked at, you know, 30 to 50 chains are not going to work at 300 to 500 chains, and they're not going to work at 1,000 to 10,000 chains. So we have a lot of work to do in the Cosmos. Right now, I would say in many ways, the activation energy for building your own chain is actually increasing, not decreasing. And I think we need sort of orchestration level solutions, which are coming, not just from Sagan, but Sagan is a great solution in this space to make this kind of thing easier to do and more accessible to developers who are a little bit earlier in their journey.
That's great. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David. Fantastic. Any other questions from the group? We've gone way over, so thank you all for staying, but we're here for you. So any other questions or thoughts, please feel free to step forward. Going once, going twice. All right. Thanks so much, everyone. But before y'all go, you should know that we have been calling ourselves Sagan. We've been using the name Sagan throughout our very limited public presence. We've been using the word Sagan throughout the entire Twitter space today, but we will very soon not be Sagan any longer. So look out for that. There's a reason why our Twitter name is coming soon, because we will no longer be known as Sagan in a few days. So look out for that. We'll be sure to be clear about it. So there's no confusion over, okay, wait a second, where'd you guys go? Have you disappeared? No, we're very much around, but we will be changing our name. So yeah, excited to share that with all of you. One last question. All right, you get the last word.
You're on stage, Giovanni. Feel free to speak. Giovanni, you're
mute. Sorry. I just wanted to say I love chainlet. I love the term chainlet.
Oh, great, man! That's a big throwback.
Zaki, like, stop eating
javalets.
Sorry.
It's okay. It's dinner time.
That's all I have to say. Thank you, guys.
It was very loud.
Thank you, Giovanni.
Thanks, Giovanni.
Very embarrassing. Sorry.
No worries. Awesome. Well, thanks very much for that, Giovanni. And thank you to all of you for coming today, for staying this entire time. The session is recorded, so it'll be available to you afterwards. And don't forget that we are open in our Discord and Telegram now. So the links are here in the Twitter space. They're also on our Twitter feed. They will stay up in our Twitter feed for 7 days. And that is just to give our early community an opportunity to bond with one another, to have some real conversations in Discord and Twitter, or sorry, in Discord and Telegram. And after the 7 day period, we'll be switching to a much more public presence. But for now, it's really just us. And any further thoughts or questions that you have, we would love to hear them anytime. Wonderful. So thank you all once again, and have a great rest of your day, your evening, wherever you are. Thanks so much, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was The Next 1000 Chains in the Multiverse, hosted by Sagan Network, recorded on Thursday, March 10th, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the Lunatic community. Have you heard about the new Terra Invest Strategy Discord server Orbital Command spun up? If you're looking for a chill place to chat about different Luna stacking strategies, or looking for some alpha, or if you're trying to find the best UST farms, or even if you just have a quick question you need answered, be sure to stop by TIS and say hi to the Orbital Command gang. Hell, I'm even in there sometimes when I'm not editing hours of CeFi spaces. You can find me in that server chatting about NFTs and answering basic Terra Luna questions. The link to the server is in the show notes, and for more information, check out orbitalcommand.io. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Luart. Luart is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. Luart provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening.
Put your hands up like you got a couple questions. Ain't no misdirection, just a bunch of flexing. All aggressive, insane from all directions. Smoke rolls in when I start a session. Clink canvas, blaze up the handlers. Rocking back and forth like I got the van stuck. Don't grind the clutch, my
mind you hush. Put your mask on and don't touch the antlers. Feeling untouchable when I'm on the verse, but in the universe I'm just writing some words, enticing these nerds while I'm laying out my memoirs. Like, remember when I had to fight the centaur? I'm a book nerd, let me take you on the journey. Lost in the labyrinth, searching out the lost fern. For certain got the taxes included, acting like a writer never felt secluded. Shit and line them up. Just another fixed game of try my luck. Go lighten up, dog. It could always be worse. Unless you're in the back of a hearse, then you're dead. Or put it in new speakers. It's a toss up, driver or just tweakers. Don't stress, yo. I've done the research. Living life like a bunch of fucking lemurs. It's a remake off the cutting floor. We take a little bit of poison and put it in the cheesecake. Tastes great, less filling, less stress, more killing. As he blew the cornerstone out the building, and the blocks came tumbling down, all humble. Feels like we're drowning in a little puddle. Rebuttal, I should be taking off in the shuttle, getting high in space with the Hubble.
Terror Spaces.